So you mentioned before that television was first introduced in Bhutan in 1999. I think radio was introduced in 1973.
Yeah.
So what sort of programming do you hear and see on their airwaves or, you know, read in their newspapers?
So in 1973, the radio that started was very rudimentary, and it wasn't radio the way we think of it on all the time. And, of course, because most people didn't have cars and most people didn't have radios, not very many people heard it. So it's only as modernization has come in that there's been more radio programming, and mostly what that programming was, especially since in 73 it was state-owned only, would be cultural programs with music, not much recorded music because there wasn't media to record it on, and talk about what was happening, some basic kind of public service announcements, very, very rudimentary. And as it's evolved, it's become much more complicated. There are shows about public affairs issues that come up the way you have here, some Buddhist shows, but mostly it's music. And now there are 8 or 9 radio stations. It changes, and most of them are privately owned, and most of them are playing pop music.
Like,
and
Western pop music?
Yes, a lot of Western pop music, yes. Huh. Yes.
And what about television? Is that state-run or is it private?
Television, there's been a movement to start a private television station over the last few years, but it hasn't happened yet. So, because, of course, TV is enormously expensive and more complicated to produce. The Bhutan Broadcasting System is very sophisticated now. It was less so when I first went there in 2007. In fact, the commercials were just basically slides. You know, go to this cafe. But now the commercials are as sophisticated as we have on TV here because people are getting access. You know, the democratization of all the technology has seeped there as well, and the creativity. So they're more sophisticated commercials, which of course is ironic in a place that didn't really have anything to sell before. And now more and more shops are buying commercials, advertising sales, advertising food. But there are many, many public service shows and more and more, not telenovelas, but they're soap operas, and many, many American Idol-esque kinds of shows.
Really? A Bhutanese yes. American Idol?
Yes.
Or I guess it'd be Bhutanese Idol.
Bhutanese Idol. Wow. They love, you know, like we all do, they love to show off their dance skills and their singing skills. There are more and more young filmmakers there, so there's more avenue for that. So the TV is becoming much more robust and representative of the culture, which is mostly young. I can't remember the percentage of people under the age of 30, but it's a huge percentage.
Are there Western programs that are on the airwaves? No. You're not getting Friends dubbed over in Bhutanese or?
Not on the BBS, but okay. They do allow in a certain number of channels from the outside world, and that typically means India. Mm. So they do get CNN international, and then they get a lot of Indian channels. So yeah, because of that, they'll see all kinds of interesting and schlocky stuff from all around the world.
And it's so interesting how you said how just with, you know, the introduction of almost Western programming in a way, or with, you know, the growth in media, how that really has shifted their mindset.
It's a lot to chew on. It was really hard for me as a career media person, even in my 40s. I think I'd seen everything. I think I'm a pretty thoughtful person. And here I was plopped into this world that felt like Mars, and it looks completely different, except when you go inside, and then it doesn't take much. This microphone could be anywhere in the world, right? But using this radio station as a lens on the culture there and working with a bunch of people who were mostly in their 20s, which is what the radio station I was with was catering to and staffed by, it was such a glimpse on how we think we know everything and we've seen everything and we're analytical and thoughtful, and it really just all gets erased when you're in a place like that, which doesn't really, it won't exist anymore. It's going to change. It's changing so rapidly. It's changed just in the last 7 years.
I'm wondering if now you can talk about the radio station that you helped form in Bhutan. This is one of just a handful of stations in the country.
It was the first non-governmentally run radio station.
So almost like a community, what we'd consider a community radio station?
Yep. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Yeah. People could just walk in the door and say, and they did, and say, I want to do a show about Buddhism, and they got a show.
All right.
Or I want to do a DJ slot, and they did. So it's great. It's very much like Northern Exposure, if you remember that TV show. Yep. It was a wonderful place. But it was so interesting because it was the first of its kind and in the whole country. And so it wasn't as simple as people just walking in off the streets because nobody had any, you know, even if you haven't worked in radio, you've heard it and you've seen enough depictions of it in TV and movies to know basically what it sounds like, kind of. But there, that wasn't really the case. They had this government media that was, you know, kind of tedious. And so all of a sudden you tell a bunch of people who are in their 20s, well, first of all, this is your job, so you're going to get paid. And second of all, figure it out. And so there were no media executives. So they hired two principals from local schools who were very educated. They'd both been educated, got their master's degrees in Canada. And these two fellows ran this radio station day to day. They didn't know how to do media either, but they
just
all
figured it out.
Yeah. Right. It's not that hard. Plug in a microphone and start talking. And in this case, start playing music. And the interesting thing was that this station was set up to help get people excited about the impending democratic conversion that was going to take place at some point, determined astrologically, because that's how things get done there. They didn't know the date, but they knew it was going to happen. So this radio station was technically primed to have conversations like this. What is democracy? How do you vote? Why does it matter? Who are the candidates? But instead, very quickly, what happened, as you might expect with people who are in their 20s and some actually in their late teens, it became a forum for playing music and dedicating songs to your girlfriend or your sister or whomever. And it was really funny for me to come from this very serious, super important, self-important show in, you know, American media. And here I was in this place where people didn't want to be bogged down by the seriousness of it all. They were just so excited to hear their voices on the radio. And at that same time, more and more people were getting cars, so more and more people actually could hear it. When this radio station, which is charmingly called Kuzu, which means hello in Dzongkha, the native tongue of Bhutan, Kuzu FM started, there was a run on transistor radios in town because people finally had something to hear and they were so excited to be able to hear their friends. This is a place where everybody knows each other. So if I'm not related to you, you're my cousin's sister because somehow we are indirectly related to each other. So all their friends and family wanted to hear what was being beamed out on this radio station. And people were so excited. And that enthusiasm was so wonderful for me.
Has it made much of an impact on the community?
Yeah, I think it's changed. It certainly in its early days, it changed the community a lot because before, to know what was going on with you, I'd have to come see you. By then, I might have had a phone, but I still would stop by your house and see how you were. How was your mother? How was your baby sister? How was the new baby? Now people were relying more on the radio to transmit information about, you know, the river is too high, be careful, or a kid got lost at the market, announcing it that way. Mm-hmm. So the way, again, it's never all good or bad, the way the media here have indelibly united us and yet isolated us, that started to happen there. And now that there are a number of radio stations and a number of newspapers too, that's more than ever the case. One fellow told me that he used to walk home from work every night. He was a government, bureaucrat, government executive. He would walk home from work every night and take him an hour and a half to get there because he'd stop along the way and see all of his friends, maybe stop in a bar and get a drink and stop for tea at a friend's and just meander home. And he said now that he has a car and a TV, after a long day at work, he just gets in the car and goes home and sits in front of the television set. So what we're all craving, which is the idea, the ability for me to just show up at your house and drop in and say hi. I don't know about you, but that's what I crave.
Yeah.
I love my neighbors. I'm very involved with my neighbors. More and more people are doing less of that in Bhutan, in the city. Most of my experience in Bhutan has been in the capital city, which, of course, is different than the really rural areas. But it's both interesting and sad and fascinating and dynamic to see.
Our next question comes from the La Crosse Tribune's Pat Anderson.
Yeah. What's the news media like there?
So when I first got there, I had a little workshop with these young staff of this paper, of this radio station. And I thought, okay, this is great because they're all going to want to go out. If you gave a recorder to 16-year-olds or 22-year-olds and said, go out and get a story, they'd be excited. They want to hear their voice on the radio. Nobody understood how to ask questions. You're sitting there diligently. I can tell you just look like a reporter. But there, people were flipping out at the idea that they'd have to go to their elders or even their peers, because first of all, you don't quiz elders. You never question authority. That's just part of the culture and respect. But you also don't ask too many questions because it's seen as disrespectful. It's the exact opposite of what we're taught from early days. So that was how it was when I first got there. Sure enough, more newspapers started and more media formed, and people got the idea pretty quickly. And especially once the first parliament was elected, people saw, who are those people who are elected? And what do you mean they get a car allowance? And why do they get that car allowance and the housing allowance? Those are the richest people. So why do they get those allowances? And people started voicing the questions that they had naturally, innately. And that was really interesting. So at the beginning, the paper was very charming and, pictures of yak and not, pictures of meetings, not very interesting, just sort of reflective of what was going on day to day. But fast forward 2 years and people started getting it and getting that they should be questioning authority and questioning the parliament and looking at corruption and exposing, roads that got made and then immediately fell apart. So it's been a very interesting, rapid acceleration into what we see media as hopefully doing in our culture, which is keeping things in check. And it's starting to do that. There's one guy in Bhutan, he's a young fellow, and all the people in the government want him drawn and quartered because he is single-handedly the Woodward Bernstein of Bhutan. And You talk to anybody in the in government there, and they all really wish he would go away because he's dogged, and it's great. It's really important.